Hello, and reawakening the sacred self, deepening our connection to our authentic soul, where we have gathered together Indigenous elders, wisdom keepers, spiritual teachers, healers, and inspirational speakers to share their insights as to how we can integrate our spiritual practices more deeply into our everyday lives, thus deepening our connection with our authentic soul. My name is Frances Billinghurst, your host for and the creatrix of this event, and I'm coming to you from Kaurna country here in South Australia. As such, I acknowledge the Kaurna people of the Adelaide Plains as being the traditional custodians of the lands upon which I reside. So mani ngā padi, everyone. Thank you for joining me. I am delighted to welcome my next guest, which is Dr. Tahria Ward, PhD. Welcome, Tahria. Thank you for being part of this event.
Oh, thank you so much, Frances. It's so lovely to be with you again and lovely to be with your audience. I appreciate the invitation very much. Thank you.
You're more than welcome, and it's always a delight to have you here. So if anyone is not familiar with her work, Tahria lives in Asheville, North Carolina in the USA, where she has a private practice offering dream analysis, psychological and spiritual guidance to clients from all parts of the world. Tahria has worked intensively with her own and other people's dreams for almost 50 years. And for nearly 30 years, she has been an avid student of the Indigenous ways of knowing and being. She has conducted a monthly global community dream symposium since 2017, wherein persons from all around the world come in and share their dreams and listen to the collective dreaming mind, and is now offering private dream groups as well. Tahria teaches online courses, speaks to a wide audiences around the world with regular interviews and lectures, and also offers private oracle readings on request. And you can find out more about Tahria in the links below. And also the gift that she very generously has for us is an invitation to join the Dream Symposium. And the title of Tahria's presentation for us today is Developing a New Mythology for the Future Human. This is Tahria's second or third attendance for Reawakening the Sacred Self. You are a popular speaker, and I really enjoy speaking with you. So again, it's delighted to have you back again. And what I thought we would start off with is, why don't we jump right into this topic, because we're standing at a precipice of change, and as such, I really feel that we need something while this world around us seems to be going to more and more chaos every day, something to look forward to. So what do you mean by the sort of the new mythology for the future human?
Oh, I'm so excited to talk about it. Frances, when I was considering, what we would talk about today, it just came into me so strongly, and I haven't been thinking about it enough lately. So I felt like, the consciousness that was sort of moving in was saying, we really need to remember and think about the teachings of Joseph Campbell, who was a great mythologist, and probably most of your audience knows about Joseph Campbell. Yeah, you have books there.
I was looking for my copy.
Right. Back in the 70s and the 80s, I read every one of them, and I listened to over and over again The Power of Myth, that set of interviews and lectures that he did about mythology and the importance of mythology. And he really brought it back into consciousness, the study of mythology in a huge way. And it just occurred to me that to really dust off and give important thought to, I feel like this should be his stuff and anything about mythology, any good, there are a lot of good mythologists who will have written beautiful books and, I'm sure lots of lectures you can find, but it seems important that we reconnect with the importance of mythology and the power of mythology and what it is and what it's for. So I'll just talk a little bit about that. In Campbell's sense of it, mythology is, you're like me. I could find on any shelf here one of his books. And I don't have to go too far to find it. I could have brought some, but I didn't bring
Mm-hmm.
some just to show you. But anyway, he talked about the myths as sort of the driving energy or story or mechanism, like a map of energy and psyche and soul in the human experience, and that the myths reflect the human soul and experience. And understanding the myths helps us to understand life, each other, ourselves, our purpose, where this is going, why it's going this way. And he described the myths of, all different cultures. And so many of them are somewhat unique to their own culture, certainly. And most of them, almost all of them, have very universal themes. It just is about what it means to be human, not necessarily what it means to be, North American or Australian or, wherever our very local myths, those stories. So, and he was able to amplify, and I think it's so helpful to remember that every person in our life is really playing a role in a mythic structure. So, in any of the myths, as you read them and take them in, there are the helpers, you have the allies, you have characters like the Wicked Witch, you have predators, you have, the savior, you have the wise guides, you have all these characters in the myths, and people in our lives play that role for us. And so it helps us in a way to see that we're part of a larger collective consciousness, not just personal. So the person that's playing, say the great ally for us, might in somebody else's life be playing the Wicked Witch. It's not that we personalize it onto that person. We understand that they're playing a role for us, and these roles are important in our own psychological development, but we don't put it on that person in the same way. Do you see what I'm saying? So it's kind of important to recognize that some energy, situation, some person is going to come in and reflect to us these sort of mythic themes and roles. And I know for a lot of people, back when I was doing my doctoral work and before, there was really interesting attention given to finding that myth that was, as a child, just totally obsessed or captured your mind. And then realizing, later in life as an adult, when you look back on it and say, why was that myth so important, so captivating, so like almost obsessing? And then you find that sort of map for your own journey through life. And so when I did this exercise, I knew immediately it was the fairy tale of Sleeping Beauty. That myth just absolutely 100% captivated me. I love that she got to be raised by fairies in the forest. I just thought that was the coolest way to start your life. It was all fairies and animals and trees and then her journey toward the union of the opposites, the male and female, and led to the Sleeping Beauty part, where she went into that. And I thought, later in life, here for almost 50 years, Francis, I've been a dream worker and a dream analyst. So of course it was Sleeping Beauty. That's when you're going into those realms, into the dream time, into those realms. And so of course it was that. And then even when I looked back and saw that at this point in my life, when there was a lot of change, my own sort of, journey was shifting. I ended up moving to the mountains of Western North Carolina and living alone on a mountaintop for 9 years alone. And I realized that was my capturing of the way that I loved her being able to be living in the forest with the fairies, and the animals. And it was like there I was, like living into that, in that whole myth, I was never alone. I was never so long, never lonely out there. I was almost never so accompanied in a way, because I was so in tune with the massive sort of life teeming all around me that gets kind of blurred when you're living, in a car, in a street, in a office building, and so forth. A lot of that, the way that we're so accompanied by, all of life in those ways. I would just encourage your readers to, it, as, when you're considering the importance and the value of myth and the sort of the mysterious nature of it, to look at the ones that have been really important to you. Maybe not in childhood, maybe it was later in life, but there's something that captured you. And what is that story? Sometimes it's even a movie that you got obsessed with. And I have a couple of those, and they tell a mythic story to me. Then they really help me to understand why. And I'll maybe tell the story of one of those here. So you just learn so much about life through the myth. Okay, so Joseph Campbell's articulation and concern was that in modern culture, in this era, especially in the West, where we moved from more of a mythic sort of orientation to life, more of a even a poetic and artistic orientation to life, into rationalism and science and literalism and materialism and consumerism and all of that. He said, in this process, we lost the living myth. The myth is gone, and nothing really new has come to replace it. And that there is a soul loss in that for us as a planet, as the species. Not just our species on the planet. There's just a tremendous soul loss, and it's very concerning. And he described that's why there's so much disorientation, so much polarization, so much loss of meaning. And as I've been thinking about this, I thought it's that hunger for myth, that we have that leads people into something like these conspiracy theories. It's almost like it's their myth, but it's not coming from the deep soul and the deep psyche of the earth. It's coming from, out of this vacuum that can be filled by sort of false narratives. And also, just an addiction or consumerism. All of that is just trying to fill that vacuum of not having our myth and giving ourselves that meaning. And even organized religion sort of fell into that, It stopped being about mysticism and stopped being about sort of the mystery and more about dogma and doctrine, more scientific, more provable, more, some kind of organized system that doesn't allow for this relationship to, it tells you what you can and can't do in a way that wasn't there before. And so then, during this time, the old myths were losing their potency. And we lost, the sacred symbols didn't hold their power for us anymore. And it was almost like we lost our sense of wonder in existence. And I was thinking, it's like when Nietzsche said, which is such a controversial statement, especially by any religious people, that God is dead. He was talking about, our idea of God is dead. We don't have a God myth now anymore that organizes us as a human species, and that somehow we've lost our sense of what is universally real and true to us in these ways, and we've stopped organizing ourselves around that. So he was saying, really, a new mythology needs to be born, and it's time for us to consider what is our responsibility there? What do we look at now to in order to create the new myth for the future of the human species? And it's becoming more imperative, I think, as we go. Like I said, I was studying this in the 70s and 80s and reading it, so absorbing it. But now I feel like in 2025, when we're here, it's even more compelling. We just don't have a collective myth that we're working with.
And just listening to the words that you're saying, and I don't mean to sort of cut you off, but it's just you sort of it's like we're moving from something that was natural all around us. It's part of our stories, part of our, as you said, our soul self, to something that's extremely, it's like with the increasing with AI, something artificial, something that's out there away from us, very sort of hedonistic, sort of like but not back into, so it's almost distancing ourselves from ourselves, self, from our body. So this is the visions. I was getting a very sort of disconnecting, and again, it's repeating what you were saying, the soul, this connection to say our feeling, our human self, which means our connection to the earth and to other people around us as well.
Yes, really, really, really good point. Right. It's like we somehow put the God and the the hero out there instead of in here. And that's, that's where we went really wrong, I think, from that. So yeah.
And also what you're saying about what Campbell was saying is that people came into our lives with these various sort of archetypal roles or methodic roles, but that the goal was for us to identify their role as it appeared to us, as opposed to projecting it onto them. And we see today there's so much more projection. So it was, again, we're sort of taking away that lesson for us as to, I'm all right, Jack, it's all everybody else's fault.
Yeah, thank you. That's really, really, really a good articulation and observation of that, which I think is really important to know. And it's that kind of idealization of the savior over there or out there or some idea instead of what's inside, or the demon, et cetera, all of it. Yeah, right.
Yes. So how do we start to start? And this is find it really interesting too, because I love mythology, and what you're also talking about, and I don't know if this is, we're going to be talking about the future human, but our ancestors, the ancient myths that people were telling, and you said as we've gone more sort of scientifically driven, the power of myth, to quote a book title, has diminished. Yet I'm interested, like in say the prehistories, which were all mythic stories, and that we sort of diminish the value of mythology as just being made up, but there's always been truth and a deeper truth in these stories that
Right.
we need to get back to.
It's interesting as you say that, I'm thinking. We think of the myths as made up, but we made them up. The myths didn't, we came first, and then the myths start telling our story. It's not us writing a myth and then living by something that's external to us. It's the myths tell our story. So what is the new story for now that we have, that things are, the old order is collapsing, the old mythology is collapsing. What is the new story? And so that's kind of what I want to, consider here. And I ran into this quote of Campbell's, which is partly what made me want to talk about it more and just remember it more. This is, I think you'll love this one, Francis, knowing you, but the only myth that is going to be worth thinking about in the immediate future is one that is talking about the planet, not the city. Not these people, but the planet and everybody on it. That's my main thought for the future, what the future myth is going to be, something that is about everything, all things, all at once. And again, it's to know that we don't tell that story. That story tells us. So what are we now giving our energy to or our focus on? Are we thinking through fragmentation? Are we thinking through polarization? Are we thinking through division? Or are we thinking about unity consciousness, the whole, all of us, all at once? And so what do we focus on? And I have some things here that I just, I think it should be much more simple than we make it somehow. But I want to talk about this thing that I learned through. I used to teach the theories of David Bohm, he's known as the father of quantum physics. I used to teach in a college classroom his theories, and about the physics of thought was the name of the course. But he talked about Bohm was he was revolutionary. Like this, he is the quantum sort of original guy, one of them. So, but he talked about Einstein's relativity theory was energy and matter are equal, and there was a bipartite structure to reality. Now, Bohm articulated it that it's not a bipartite structure, it's a tripartite structure. So it's energy and it's matter. And then the third element is meaning. And so the meaning that we give something actually enters the realm of, as we would call it, form of the explicate order, as he discussed the implicate and the explicate order. So when we give meaning to something, it changes energy and matter. So what are we giving meaning to? Are we giving meaning to these stories that divide us, that polarize us, that lose the coherence of everything? Or do we give meaning to the stories that unite us, and understand that we're all one thing? And he was saying, or Campbell was saying, going back to Campbell now, that it's going to be our artists and storytellers that are going to be, and that aspect of ourself that are going to be basically writing the new myth, or allowing for the new myth to emerge through us. It's not going to be the politicians and the generals and the armies and the government policies that's going to write the new myth. It's going to be us and what we're living, what we actually live with our the fullness of our being. And the artists and the storytellers are the ones, like I was saying, what is that myth or that story that constellates so much energy and meaning for you? Why did this film, capture my imagination for years and years? Because there was a meaning there that I'm finding. So what is that? And why is it so valuable and important? And so, and it's that side of ourselves. It's not the, I've had dreams. I won't go into it. I want to talk about dreams a little bit, because I think the dreams are our myth makers. That's where the myths are arising, and giving us the stories. But I remember having a dream of, I was working with something in the dream, and I won't tell that story necessarily now, but as I was working with it, it was more about the mystery. And the CIA and the FBI came and knocked on my door and then sat me down at a table, and they were gonna, it was illegal to be thinking what I was thinking, because it would hurt the old order. And so I had the CIA and the FBI at my table, and I realized those are the parts of myself. It's those parts of ourselves that we have to worry about. We really do. This is an internal process where somehow we're afraid to leave the old order behind and take off into the future human. And so I'm going to tell you a couple of dreams that I feel are emergent, through me, that to me are sort of articulating something about the new myth and what we're talking about here.
That's fantastic, yeah.
One of them is this dream that I had, both of these dreams I had this summer. So they're very current. Although, I have dreams that are 40, 50 years ago, they're just as current. I mean, dreams are timeless. So, but in one of them, I'm taken out, like across the dark waters, and dropped into the middle of the ocean on a dark, stormy night. It's all dark. The waves are, high. It's a big storm, and I'm there. I'm just dropped there, and I'm gonna drown, and I know it. I know there's no way out of this. And then all of a sudden, this huge flock of birds comes down and swoops me up and lifts me just through the energy of their flight together, and puts me into my home, into safety, into my home. And as I considered that dream, it was so powerful. And then just as I was absorbing it, I actually saw somebody posted on Facebook, how these synchronicities happen, a murmuration of birds, that was like, and I thought, when I saw that, I thought, I want to be there. I want to be in that. I want to be one of those birds. I want to fly like that, just in this kind of harmony all together. And then I realized, oh, I just did in my dream. That's what it's telling me. I want to be that. That's who we can be. Is how do all of us, not just humans, but all species, all living life on this planet, how do we move in this way that is coordinated? And when it's not this individualistic idea that we had. I mean, it developed certain things that we went when we went into the individualism and, individuation, as Jung talks about, which is so important, and all of that. So it's not to put that aside, but it's also to know that as we do that, then we can start to move into this harmony with one another. And that's how we start to move now. That's sort of the myth for the future, is how do we move together? All the things we can do. And if you look at ants, if they're just going off in all the different directions, nothing's happening. If they get together, they start moving like this, and they've built tunnels, they've been built bridges, they built bridges, it's just like all the things. It's like if we start moving like that together, putting our minds together and recognizing that that's built into us to be able to do that, and we've lost track of that. And then another dream that I had this summer was one where this is as simple as it can be and as just powerful as it could be. I was lying in my bed, sort of just mostly in the dreams, just starting to maybe a little bit come to consciousness. And the words came, "There is this consciousness moving through me. There is a consciousness moving through me." And as I had that sensation, it was consciousness itself was moving me. Not like, even in some of the sciences now, they think the consciousness originates in the brain, that it's, they've got all the, I don't know what the thyroid or the, what is that organ in there? Anyway,
Pituitary and
it begins with a P. I can't, I don't know. Anyway, that, consciousness is there. This is like, no. Consciousness is, it's a field, and it's moving through us, it's moving in us, and it's to know. And that's, I think, what quantum physics is starting to help us to really see and understand, and able to prove through their own methods, that conscious, everything is conscious. It's all conscious. And we can work with the consciousness that's in everything. And so it's about re-understanding who we are, that we are part of this mycelial network of consciousness that's everywhere, that it's in all things. And that we are an important cell in that body. And sort of wake up from the dream of this separation consciousness, where it's all about me, and it's all about my family, it's all about my people, my whatever. And it has to be, it can't leave anybody behind if we're going to be enter into this consciousness. Not a single soul can be left behind, or species, as you were saying about the species there that are struggling in your part of the world because of the warm waters, right? So we can't leave that behind. We've got to have all of us or none of us. And that's one thing Buckminster Fuller, I have a quote of his I'm going to leave you with, but he used to say, it has to be all of us or none of us. Nobody's going to survive if everybody doesn't survive, basically, if we don't get ourselves on track with understanding the truth of that. And that we're on a very critical path now, unless we get there with that. So, and I just wanted to say, my grandson, who is the love of my life, he's the little light of my life. He's 9 years old, and I get to be with him quite a bit. His hunger for the myths is profound. He's reading Wings of Fire and all these, and he'll tell you the stories of the myths that he's reading and these things, and he just is on fire. He's so excited about these mythic stories. He'll say, "Tell, can I tell you about?" His mom sometimes is like, "Oh, not right now." He's just, he's on fire with it, and it just reminds me of our native, natural child, pure soul hunger for myth. It's like we need these myths to tell our children, and how to tell them. So, yes.
Yes. Oh, wow. There's just so much to think about what you've just said, Tarja. So, but yes, I've been making a lot of notes, and I do like coming back to what you said at the beginning as to, and this could be something for our listeners and our watchers to consider. As you said, the most important thing is to consider what was the, or what still is the story in our youth that keeps, that we enjoyed, that we enjoyed reading or watching the
Right.
mythic story there. And I suppose taking it to the next level as adults, looking back and seeing how did that play out in our own life? And is there a message in it to move forward? Because also what you're saying, because we've lost this connection, I mean, and I'm thinking automatically of the shamanistic teachings of how we're all interconnected in the big sort of cosmic web.
Yes.
And this is basically what you're saying, that these the true myths are about. It's about everything is interconnected. And when we come back to that realization that we are part of the whole, we're just, you know, really just sort of floundering. But when we do come back to that realization, then we move forward. As you said, it's for all or nothing. We're all in it
Yeah,
together, so to speak.
exactly. Yeah, it has to be that way, and that's a recognition we need to make. Nothing, no one gets left behind in this.
Yeah. And it's almost like even it's really hard to say, because we're in such a capitalistic society or mindset, and we've been in this area for a long period of time now. But there is sort of like an undercurrent that's beginning to sort of become more and more prevalent in certain pockets around the world, where people are coming to returning back to basics. Turning back to, if you've got excess sort of like veggies in your garden, if you're lucky enough to have a garden, you're bartering, or you're sort of exchanging them with your neighbors, or the sort of book clubs where people are exchanging books. And that's sort of like the giving and the sharing, the ebbing and flowing. That's all sort of like happening without, should we say, Big Brother from George Orwell, sort of 1999, sort of watching. There's this sort of underground current of people coming back to the more sharing and more communal way of doing things.
Right. And it has to be a really good, strong combination of the individual and the collective, you know, because we have to take care of ourselves, right? We do have to take care of ourselves so that we can, you know, be of support in this world. So that's necessary to get our own story, figure out what it's telling us about what we need to function, and then to hold as a universal power and truth, this sort of bigger myth. But I think the sort of obstacle that we've come up against is this concentration on what's good for me is that's all, you know, everybody else can worry about themselves, but it's what's good for me. You know, and I was thinking even about that recently of when Jesus was in the desert, you know, for the 40 days and 40 nights before his ministry, for those of you who know the Christian story anyway, before he began his ministry, he went into the desert for 40 days and 40 nights on a what the natives would call a vision quest. You know, he was out there getting ready for what he was going to do with his work. He had the story of the temptation. Satan wanted him to worry about himself. And if he could get him to worry about himself, saving himself or giving all this power for himself, like I can make you this big leader and you can, you know, and if Jesus would have gone for that idea, which one could say, you know, rises up in the human soul, this like, wait a minute, I think I can just take care of me here, you know, what am I doing? That was his big temptation. And it's for us to know that when it comes like taking care of yourself. And I think for those of us who are living in my country, the United States, there's a lot, you know, but you see it everywhere, certainly. But there's a lot of just taking care of yourself. People are afraid to stand up for what's good for everybody because they're worried about what's going to happen to them personally if they do stand up against an authoritarian. And it's threatening, but if they've completely abandoned the idea of doing what's good for the entire everybody, not just the United States, but the whole world, every single body in it, and the planet, especially the planet we're pulling out of all that. So that's, I think, the main obstacle is this orientation toward ourselves. And when we have this vacuum of the myth that would tell us the story, then these other stories come in, the totalitarianism, because people want a certainty. They're just they need something that'll describe it for them in this sort of dark way. But I feel like now we're moving into the Aquarian age, and it's just time. It's just appropriate now for us to sort of learn how to release and let go of some of that old myths and recognize that that the next phase of our journey is going to be all of us. I'm thinking of that as I said, I might tell a story of a movie that really captured me, and this was back in the 90s, so maybe I'll just tell that little story. It's really sweet.
That's fine. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, it's just a good story, and it's a good sort of I just thought of it again recently, and I thought, well, that's why that was so powerful to me then, because it was this myth trying to emerge in my own psyche that it was speaking to, that was enlivening and awakening. And this was what, 30 years ago. But the movie was called Newsies, and it was a Disney film. And I really recommend it. It's just a sweet story, but it's a true story. And it's about these orphan boys in New York City, right after, I think, 1910, 1915, early part of the last century, who were newspaper boys. And they, got a penny for every paper they sold, And so the newspaper guy, this is what's happening in our country right now. The newspaper guy decided he wanted more money for himself and for his cronies. And so he didn't know, he didn't want to start charging himself, and his cronies didn't want to, he wanted to give them more. So he started charging the newsies more. So the newsies, these poor, poverty-stricken orphans on the street, were making less money, charging them more for the newspapers that they turned over and sold. And so finally they just said no, and they rose up, and there was one leader in there. He's just so sweet. His name was Jack in the movie, a great character, who was, just sort of became somebody who led them all and said, if we do all this all together, if everybody does it together, we can conquer. And everybody was like, Joseph Pulitzer, are you kidding me? We got no power. We gotta just get whatever we can, just to survive. But they rose up, and there was a place in this story, Francis. I looked at this just again recently in my mind, where Pulitzer started to realize that something was really happening here, and it could be dangerous. It could be something that was coming up against his plans. And so he tried to get Jack, just like Satan and Jesus in the desert, tried to get Jack to just worry about himself. Look it, called him into his office. I'll give you all this money. You'll have money in your pocket for the rest of your life. You just take care of you. Those street rats don't care about you. And he almost went for it, and then he didn't. And then, in order to survive, get their freedom and conquer this situation, they got all the child laborers all over New York, the ones that worked in the factories, the ones that did the weaving, the ones that did the food production, and the one, all the child laborers all over New York went on strike. And by working together, it was that unity that I remember inspiring me. It's like, there's nothing we can't do if we do it all together. It was almost like the murmuration of birds. I saw it. It's like, I got it. If we work together like this, there's nothing. There's no power greater. There's nothing we can't do if we do it together. And anyway, that's a good little story that just, I couldn't, I really couldn't quite explain why that movie captivated me. So it just captivated me. And then I started writing. I was a minister at the time. I start writing about unity and unity consciousness. And so I knew it was that, but now it comes back, and it's even more so, I think, of value and importance to recognize the power that we have if we work together in these ways. There's, they just, those, rich guys, they don't have it, the power we do as people.
Yeah, and also, so we've been sort of trained or encouraged to think about, as you said, the individual and what can I gain and our wealth, it's all individual sort of advancement. But it's like, which is, and I'm not knocking it, but when it's to the expense of someone else and we're climbing over other people instead of like, if we're also like helping each other up, and I think this is the, as you said, the unity consciousness is just like we're all in it together, and it's just like Yeah, and this is going way off topic, but when you see, like, let's say the 1% have so much, yet there's so many people with so little, and it's just like, why do you need so much? And this is a result of this huge separation that we have from the whole, from coming back to what you said right at the beginning, from our soul self, either, because our soul self isn't sort of driven by this greed and this. Yeah, I'm all right, Jack, and everything's good for me, and I'm not even going to look over there because you're not important. It's just like, that's not for humans. We are supposed to be caring and caring about each other, ourselves, and the world in which we live. And this is coming back to the soul.
Right, and it's like living that other myth of me first that is showing us it's killing the planet. It's killing the oceans, it's killing the waters, it's killing the air, it's killing each other. It's what creates war. I need this, you can't have it. And so, I think when we move into the unity consciousness, there's no war becomes obsolete. We're helping everybody. Why would you war with somebody? We're trying to help everybody, feed everybody. We can all do this together, everybody together. And Buckminster Fuller again used to talk about if we'd stop spending money and energy on weaponry, which is when you look at the budget that our weapons of war and our investment in war gets. And he said, if you stop spending it on weaponry and put it into livingry, all of that into livingry, just imagine. So, into put it into life. What could you, how, we're defending ourselves, but what if we just tried to feed the whole world? What if we helped them build their roads and their, if we took all that money and educated everyone and fed everyone and created a high standard of life for everyone and medical care for every, I mean, we could do that. But instead we're spending it on stockpiles of ammunition to kill each other. I mean, what is the insanity here? We really,
And the
yeah.
ironic thing is, like, a majority of the wars are over food or basic. When you boil it down, when you sort of strip the layers away, it's around the basic things. Or it's on seeing what you've got and I want it, but I don't know how to get it because I'm not educated enough, or my people are starving. So I'm going to attack you because you're sort of like taking advantage of me to get your wealth. And it's just like, well, why don't you say, yeah. Just share it, start raising everybody else up. And it comes back to what you said right at the beginning about fear. Fear is a big controller. It's always a, and we've seen that, especially in the West, throughout the generations of, the reds
Right.
under the bed and, the other person, the other, which coming back to, I suppose, dream analysis and the areas where you're familiar with, it is that it's our shadow self, really, that we are afraid of, that avoidance of the other, which is part of us.
Right. It's that's just a beautiful distillation that you made there. It is about fear, and how do you overcome fear? And then that just took me right back to the Jesus story. He didn't have fear. Okay, kill me if that's what you need to do. I'm not succumbing to this. And I think it's if we conquer fear, there's nothing we can't do. If we're not, if we're so that, that really is key. That's very core. Thank you for saying that.
Yes.
Yeah.
More than
Right.
welcome to. We are running out of time, Taria, which is very
Okay.
unfortunate because we could chat all day. I know we can
That's
because this is
right.
such, I feel this is such a fascinating subject. So in the future, or preparing ourselves for the future, for our future myth, you've already suggested that, for us to sort of think about what stories from our youth, what movies that we were fascinated on. There could be an underlying image or an aspect connection there. What are there anything else, any other thoughts that you may have about as we move into the future, any new visions or insights for we sort of guiding us into the
Right.
unknown?
Right. I think we're moving into the Aquarian age, and the Aquarian age is about the about everybody. It's about everybody being together and sort of more, working more through the more intuitive parts of ourselves. So it's like to enter with consciousness and full on surrender to this. We're leaving the known world and we're entering the new world, allowing the future human to just like leave behind the old myths, the old stories, and enter the new story. And to know that I just had a thought there and it just went away. But I did want to leave you with this. I think in the Aquarian age, this is what we can do. This is a quote of Buckminster Fuller's. I just ran into it again today. It's been a favorite of mine for a long time, and I just hit it again today, and I thought I want to read this one to you. This is, to me, tells the whole story. This is kind of all we need to know. He says, and he lived his life this way. I knew him personally. He lived his life absolutely like this. He said, "You do not belong to you. You belong to the universe. The significance of you will remain forever obscure to you, but you may assume that you are fulfilling your significance if you apply yourself to converting all of your experience to the highest advantage to others. Make the world work for 100% of humanity in the shortest possible time through spontaneous cooperation, like the murmuration of birds, like through spontaneous cooperation without ecological offense or the disadvantage of anyone." And to me, every phrase in there, that's our map, that's our myth. How do we create these stories of we don't belong to ourselves, we belong to the universe. And when this consciousness of the universe moves through us, no disadvantage to anyone, no ecological offense, everyone creating the highest advantage for absolutely everyone. And so I've started saying this prayer. This came to me recently, and I've been saying it every day, and I hope to for the rest of my life. But I start the day with, "Dear universe, I dedicate this day as a prayer and an offering. May all that I do be for the highest good of all beings in all worlds." And I think if we just pray for all beings in all worlds and dedicate everything we do for the highest benefit to all, and even when we go to sleep at night, go into the dream time, if I want to work for the benefit of all, what can I do in these hours where I'm loosed from my body and working in the dimensions for the highest good of all beings and all things, and knowing that I belong to the universe and so do we all, and how to lift everyone up. So I just think that's our new myth. We can do this. We've got it. It can be done. And I think all the energies are like the wind is on our back with the Aquarian age and the sort of collapsing of the old stories and the old myths. It's like pushing this wind on our backs but we need to see it. We need to get that vision for the future. Of who we are, who we're becoming, and what we're going to focus on, and the meaning that we give to the things that we do. And if the meaning is, no matter what we're doing, the simplest thing is to put into the field of consciousness this intention of helping all. We can do this.
No, I think that's actually extremely beautiful and profound. And it also, in my mind, sort of, it's almost like we've gone back full circle because this is what our Indigenous peoples have always said, that we are part of the greater whole. And that's
Right.
not just the family, the immediate family, it's like the earth family, the cosmic family. We're all one. And what's the role that we're playing?
Right. That's why the indigenous people and those studies captivated me. I focused my whole doctoral work on studying with them because they still know. And the indigenous part of us knows. It's not them, it's us. Because all of us are indigenous, all of our ancestors, all of us lived in an indigenous way. Modernity is very recent, and so our ancient roots are there, and they mirror it back to us. Yeah.
Oh, no. No. Very profound and very wonderful, Taria. Before we go, I just want to sort of mention or get you an opportunity to just talk a little bit about the wonderful gift or invitation, really, that you have for our audience, and that is to take part in the Global Community Dream Symposium that you run with Jocelyn Starfeather. So, could you tell us a little bit more about this Dream Symposium, especially as I think it feeds very nicely into what you've been talking to us about the myths and the dreams and a way of sort of helping people to get back in touch to that creative, artistic aspect of themselves to create the new
Yeah, thank
future.
you. Yeah, true. Yeah, so this is, I do recommend to all of your listeners and everyone they know to listen to our dreams. These are the myth makers. This is, and it's a language to learn. We wake up in the morning and you think, what in the world was that about? It is a language to learn. It's a symbolic language and it's a mythic language. And once we start to pay attention to it, it starts to open its secrets and its wonders to us. And so Jocelyn Starfeather, good dear friend of mine, and I started this Dream Symposium back in the early 2017. So we've been doing it all these years, every month. If you'll have the link there where you can register for the symposium, you'll get the dates, you'll get the link, and you can get a recording after. So even some of our brothers and sisters in other parts of the world that like where you are, it's in the middle of the night for you, but they a lot of people listen to it on the playback and then send me their dreams if they want me to share one of their dreams with the community. But we all listen to the collective meaning of the dream. We do private work in private, but in this public forum, we're listening to what are the messages in these dreams? What are they for all of us? And that's what Indigenous people do, even to this day. They get up in the morning and listen to the dreams of the village, and that's how they know what the spirits and the gods want us to know today. So that's what we do. And everyone is invited. If you go to that link, you'll get on my website and you can sign up. But if you are interested to be on my mailing list, go to the homepage of my website and sign up for my mailing list too. And then I can tell you when I'm doing private dream groups or how to do private dream work with me, where we can work on what the dream means to you privately. So you can do that as well. So everybody's welcome. It's free. And we'd love to have you come and listen to the dreams and share your dreams if you have one to share.
That's wonderful. And just a thought, have you like in some of the more recent supposed, are there like common themes that you hear about in people's dreams? Is that something that you're talking about the dreams for the collective? Are there, when people are discussing their dreams, are there common themes that are beginning to appear? Are we that connected?
There are. It's fairly miraculous, how if you come to one of these symposiums, you start to see, here's somebody in Australia and here's somebody in Minnesota and somebody in Canada and somebody in South Africa, and everybody had the same dream this week. It's like kind of lets you know that the dreams come from, that it's part of the unity consciousness, that everybody, these themes are arising in people's dreams. And so very often there's very coherent themes in the dreams. In the last one, there was somebody who had a dream of the birth of a baby in the midst of all this chaos, the birth of this baby girl, and they wrapped it in swaddling clothes, kind of, and put it up on an altar, and everybody started just honoring this baby girl, and all the discord that had been around just calmed, and it's almost like that feminine consciousness was we're giving birth to that. And that theme seemed to come through so many of the different dreams about how the feminine consciousness is rising up now. So all those stories. And the unity consciousness, I told the bird murmuration dream, and that one seemed to be reflected in a lot of the other dreams. And in one of them, it was angels falling from heaven in two different people's dreams. At the end of the dream, the angels all came from heaven. And that's sort of like the birds, that came and got me. That was in their dreams too. And so it's just kind of remarkable how the coherence of the stories and symbols and myths that occur through the dreams, it's really something to hear it. And it awakens that aspect of your own knowing, that dream time self, because we have a self that's in the dream time at all times. This really waking world is when we're sleeping. It's when the dreaming that we're awake. And we got to kind of switch that a little bit. Your awakened self is trying to wake you up in this what we call waking world. So, and so we're working with that. Yeah.
Oh, that sounds really fascinating. And again, a reminder just how powerful myths are. And though we live in a world that we're so disconnected, there's still that part of us that is connected to those original Dreamtime mythic stories of our ancestors and of everyone else on the planet as well.
Right.
So we're not
Yeah.
that individual, no matter how much we like to think we are.
It's such an imaginary thing. The individual is just an illusion, a delusion, a creation in the mind. It isn't true. So, yes.
And the sooner we realize that and start living, come back to what's really important, what is actually true, I think the
Right.
better for us.
Yeah. Yeah, and to know we've got this, not to have fear and not to feel powerless. We've got this.
Tahria, thank you once again for everything that you've shared. It's always been a great honor and privilege to have you here.
It's just a delight speaking to you again, Frances. Thank you for what you're doing. And really, I can't wait to hear all your speakers, and I ask blessings for all of us together as we enjoy what you're creating and really, really value what you're doing. So thank you for doing it.
Well, thank you very much. And for anyone to find out more about Taria's work, especially this exciting The Dreamer Symposium, you can find out all about that in the links below. And also, don't forget to sign up for her mailing list to find out what else she's offering, especially if you're living in North Carolina. But she also works online as well, so it doesn't matter where you are in the world, so check her.
Doesn't. I have clients from everywhere. Yeah.
If you want to know more about your dreams, check out the links below. So everyone
Yeah.
who's watching this, just like to say, Natalia, thank you. No doubt you have enjoyed our discussion with Dr. Tahria Ward as much as I have, and I look forward to seeing you again soon.
Thank you,
Blessings.
dear Francis. Thank you.
Thank you.